So I had a misunderstanding the other day with Buzz, the clerk at the Chevron gas station. Kind of a humorous happening, if you want to hear about it. My wife had a friend of hers named Ashley coming over to the house, and they were going to watch the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And Ashley had never seen it before. And so I decided to sit down and watch the movie with them. It's always fun to watch a movie that I love with somebody who's never seen it before and, see what they pick up on and just in a way kind of see it through new eyes and talk to them about it and all that. And Jessica and Ashley have kind of been like making a list of summer movies, just movies that primarily like Ashley hasn't seen that are kind of like essential viewing in a way. Like a couple weeks ago, they watched Jaws. And like last night, they watched All That Jazz. So, yeah, just movies that, Jessica's friend Ashley has never seen before. So they were going to watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and I was going to watch it with them. So I decided to walk down to the Chevron at the corner, just the corner gas station, to get some beer for myself. And on my way out the door, Jessica stops me and asks me if I can pick up some wine for her and Ashley. So, yeah, I decided to do it. So, yeah, I walk down to the gas station, and in there is just I get my Coors Banquet beers, and I get a bottle of wine for Jessica and Ashley. And the thing about it is with the gas station wine, and really this is like true of wine in general, unless it's a special occasion, I don't really look at the brand, like the name on the label. Most of the time, I don't even look at the year, especially when I'm like going to the gas station because I know it's going to be probably 2021, 2022. It doesn't really matter. It's very irrelevant what the year is on gas station wine. Really, the only thing I look for is like what kind of wine it is. Is it like a white Zinfandel? Is it a Pinot Noir? Is it a Cabernet? And Jessica wanted like a Cabernet Sauvignon, which is a red wine. It's like her favorite kind of wine. So I pick it up for her and I take it to the counter to pay for it. And there, behind the plexiglass of the gas station counter is Buzz. And I've talked about Buzz before in the show, and Buzz used to be like a regular fixture in my life for many years, because he was just one of these guys that are like, you have like supporting players in your life, people that you don't really know their backstories, their personal histories, but you're nevertheless on a very friendly basis with them. You have a rapport with them because you see them every single day. In a way, you see them more than like some members of your, family, immediate family. They're the people who work at the gas stations, who work at the grocery stores, these people that you see on your way to and from things, to work or on your way home. And you strike up a rapport with them. And this was me and Buzz. Many years ago, I used to go to the gas station, the Chevron, almost every single day. And I would see Buzz there behind the window selling things. And he was always these guys who, one of these guys who just has like a big friendly smile, always wants to joke with you, always has like a quip to share with you. Usually it's like a little bit blue. And yeah, this is Buzz. And a few years ago, Buzz had a heart attack. And he, I guess, retired and moved to Georgia. And so I was like, okay, that's it. I guess I'm never going to see, Buzz again. He's going to be one of these people I'm just going to think about many years from now, after having not thought about him, for years. And so, yeah, Buzz just kind of retires, I guess, for health reasons and all that. And, yeah, I go by several years without seeing him at all, and then one day he's just there. I go into the gas station to probably buy some beer, and there Buzz is behind the plexiglass. And he's a little bit thinner. He's a lot grayer, but he's, you know, still there. And I don't really see him that much more these days as much as I used to because, you know, I've gotten a little bit older now and the gas at the Chevron has gotten a lot more expensive and the wine has gotten a lot more cheaper. And I like to save money on gas but spend money on wine. So, yeah, it's weird when, you know, whenever I see Buzz because it's just like I just – have to think that I used to see this guy every single day and then for years I didn't at all and now he's back. So, and the one thing about Buzz after he's had his heart attack is that he can't belt the way he used to. He can't speak as loud as he used to. So it's sad because like every time I see him, it's almost like watching a silent movie through the plexiglass. You know, just I can see that he's smiling. I can see that he just like cracked some kind of dirty joke in my direction, but I can't hear him. And so I always have to like kind of pretend that I'm hearing him and I have to laugh anyway. And sometimes I'll say something that may not be completely related at all to what he said, but just as a manner of being courteous and nice and all that. And it's not necessarily like an insincere gesture to pretend that you're laughing at somebody that just cracked a joke. It's just like acknowledging that like, God, it's so good to see you back here, man. After all those years, you know, you're back and you're in full form and you're cracking jokes and you're happy and all that stuff. And just a guy who's there to like make your life a little bit better, you know, in this, the middle of this transaction, that's not exactly that exciting. So at the gas station. So yeah, I go up there the other night and I put the beer on the counter and I put the wine on the counter and, Buzz says something to me on the way out after I paid for everything. And I don't hear him, but I can see it, like he found it particularly funny and he was laughing and filling up just the counter area with his laughter. And I kind of got closer to him. I was like, I didn't hear you, man. What'd you say? And he said, enjoy your menage a trois. And, I thought this was kind of a weird thing to say because, number one, how did he know that I was going to be hanging out with, like, two girls? but also just a very, like, that's not really something that you say to somebody as they're, like, going away from you. It's a weird thing. Enjoy your menage a trois. So, I guess was a little insincere with it. I was just like, okay, thanks. And I leave and I go out and the bells jingle above me and I'm out, and I'm gone. And I walk back up to the house, go in and me and, sit down and, Jessica and Ashley have already started the movie and they're watching it and all that. And I put the beer, in the fridge and I get the wine out and I open it for them and set it in front of them. And they look at it and they're like, oh, menage a trois. And this is so weird because it's like, what in the world? This is the second time somebody's mentioned menage a trois. And Jessica says this and she says it as like a question. And I'm just like, I mean, we haven't even had wine yet and already we're talking about menage a trois. So this is kind of strange. Because a menage a trois, if you don't know, is French for, you know, let's get it on with two sexy ladies. So, you know. So I'm kind of like thinking about this for a second, like, no, I don't know if this is right. This is weird. And I said, what in the world? Buzz said that to me down at the gas station. At this point, I'm thinking like there's no way they could actually be talking about menage a trois in its traditional form. And I'm sort of thinking that, well, they saw me bring in the wine with a six pack of beer. And maybe that's like some kind of gas station lingo for a menage a trois. For when you buy wine with beer, you call it a menage a trois because you got the man and the woman. But shouldn't it be like beer and then two wines, or two beers and one wine, or something like that? I don't know. So I was very confused by this menage a trois. So I said to Jessica, why did Buzz say that to me down there? And she says, points to the wine. She's like, well, it's because you got menage a trois wine. And I looked at it, sure enough, the label was menage a trois, right? I didn't expect it to take 10 minutes to tell that story. but nevertheless, you just heard it. So this is Mike Booty. This is the Midnight Citizen Show. Welcome. I'm sitting here in the backyard of my friend Dave's house. And, yeah, he just asked me to come over and sit out here with their dog Mila while their house is being cleaned by this professional cleaning service. So they were afraid that they're both out of town today, and like the dog usually like freaks out whenever they have company over, and so they just didn't want the people to be like scared off, I guess, by this dog who right now is totally just asleep in the shade, could not be any interested in going in and scaring off cleaning people. But nevertheless, Dave asked me to come over here, and he paid me with a cigar, which I've got right here. It's a Rocky Patel Edge Sumatra cigar, so maybe I'll have that in just a minute. I don't know. Maybe we will. But yeah, it is quite hot out here today. I've been out. This is a little after 1 o'clock in the afternoon here, and I've been out just all morning long, going between multiple jobs in the area. I was talking about this last week. Like my summer has just been full of moonlighting and just going out and just doing various jobs, making money and really like whatever I can, just living very much like this kind of slacker like existence where like everything I do is just kind of to subsidize just moments like this, just kind of hanging around and doing nothing and not feeling like I should be out making money and supporting myself. And this has just really like been what the last year or so of my life has been like ever since I quit my job teaching. Lots of just going back and forth between anything that can yield me like a little bit of an income while I finish my master's degree in English literature. Yeah, yesterday was definitely a very bizarre day because I was just going back and forth between three different jobs all day long. I was tutoring for the University Writing Center. So I have to do tutoring for students as part of my agreement with the university that they pay for all my school, basically pay for me to get a degree. And in exchange, I have to tutor their students. And so I was tutoring students all day long yesterday. I was going back and forth between that. I was also out delivering food for Grubhub. Delivering food to like people in offices and retirees at their houses. And kids whose parents had left them their credit cards for the day to get something to eat. You know, these latchkey kids who are home for the summer. And I was also privately tutoring as well. I had I mentioned last week that a parent of a student that I usually work with during the year, who's out in San Francisco, he's a middle school student, she reached out to me and asked me to help him prepare for this private school entry exam. So I'm helping him out with that all summer long. So yeah, basically it's just all day long just balancing these three different jobs. And it gets weird. You just lose your place sometimes. Like I couldn't even, I was trying to like remember at one point today or yesterday, like, do I have the student today? What day is it? Is it like Monday or Wednesday or Tuesday? No, if it were Tuesday, I'd have class because I have like class on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'm taking like a summer class in linguistics. So like last night I was just like out delivering food, and then I realized, oh my gosh, I have like a student that I've got to tutor in like 15 minutes. So I had to like, I didn't have enough time to make it home to get to my computer at home, so I had to go to, like, the closest Starbucks that was still open. I don't know if you've noticed this or not. I don't know if it's like this where you are, but Starbucks are closing really, really early these days. Mila. See, I had to, like, get to a Starbucks really quickly to open up my laptop and log on and talk to this kid in San Francisco and help him understand how to, like, do analogies and all that, you know. Like, camera is to picture as microphone is to blank. I don't know. Yeah, and then today I woke up and went to Whole Foods at like 8 o'clock in the morning and worked for Amazon Flex. You know, Amazon Flex is this program that just allows regular Joes like me to like log on to an app and then go and pick up people's like packages from the distribution warehouse, or in my case this morning, go to Whole Foods and pick up their groceries and take it to them. So I went and did that. Yeah, and I've done Amazon Flex where I'll actually go to the distribution warehouse. I've done that once. I don't think I'm ever going to do that again because this is a very shady thing. You know, like you hear all these stories in the news about how Amazon is isn't really considerate of their employees in a way. You know, they track them every time they go to the bathroom and stuff like that. Like all of that is true. But I think like one of the worst things that they do is when you work for Amazon Flex, you agree to like go on a certain like an hourly shift. So you may be working like 4 to 8:30 or something like that. And they'll tell you how much money that you are expected to make, although you could make more with tips. You know, so you go to the Amazon warehouse. The only thing that you don't know when you get there is you don't know where you're going. And it could be anywhere in the you know, Amazon's map in your area. Basically, you know, Amazon has like a map of what areas their distribution centers cover. And so, yeah, like the last time I went and delivered for Amazon Flex, I went to the distribution warehouse. They told me to drive out to Pell City, which is like an hour drive from where I was. So I went out there and then spent the next 4 hours delivering and all these different neighborhoods I wasn't familiar with, and several neighborhoods I wasn't exactly comfortable in. So, I didn't like that very much. But when I go and pick up groceries from Whole Foods, because I guess Amazon like owns Whole Foods now or something. So yeah, you can go onto Amazon and order all your groceries through Whole Foods. So what I like about them is like you don't have to like deliver a million packages to like a million different houses. You basically just deliver, like, I think this morning I went and I got a total of like 10 groceries and I delivered them to two different addresses, which were both within like 30 minutes of me. So it wasn't that bad. So yeah, I very much enjoy that. I enjoy just working in my car. Again, I've talked about this before that, 10 years ago, you couldn't do this. You know, you just, if you wanted money, you had to, like, get a regular job. You know, you actually had to, like, sign a W-9, and, you know, you had to, like, go into, like, a brick-and-mortar store, and you had to just, like, be there for, like, a certain number of hours. Even if there was no business, even if there were no customers, you just have to, like, sit there or stand there. And, you know, by the way, if you have time to lean, you have time to clean. So you're constantly working in this place for hours and hours on end. And it's kind of a drag. Like, I know it's part of the great American work ethic to go and, you know, have a job. But, I mean, if you just want, like, a little bit of money every now and then, and you don't want it to, like, kind of get in the way of, like, living your life. It's kind of nice now that we live in this world where we just have all these different things, all these different gigs that you can do. And there's, like, honestly no strings attached. Not really. I mean, again, if you know, the Amazon Flex is really the only thing that I've ever done, the only side gig that I've done that just is not really honest with you and kind of puts your life in danger. But all these other things I've done, like Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash, it's all just like you just sign on and you just go make money. And when you don't want to make money anymore, you just sign off. And I love that we live in this world, and I'm taking advantage of it, is all I can say. And it's allowed me to stay afloat, more or less. And listen, I'm not against at all, like, going and working in one place all day long. Okay, that's fine. And I did that for many years. You know, I was a teacher for 5 years. I went to school and I was there for like 9 hours a day. But I was more or less happy at that job. You know, I was always busy, and my days were filled with purpose, right? But there are definitely jobs I've had in the past that just, like, didn't feel like that, where it just felt like you were essentially co-opting your entire life just to, like, make a little bit of money for yourself. And you weren't really, you know, you would go and do the job and you wouldn't really have time for anything else in your life, to do anything else that mattered to you. Just because, you know, you were working for minimum wage. And I didn't like that. So yeah, for years and years and years, I've always wanted to just, like, have this lifestyle, and now I have it. And I'm very happy with it, I have to say. Yeah, like, after I, you know, got finished delivering groceries for Amazon Flex, I realized that I had some tutoring to do for the university. So I went to a Starbucks and I sat down and got some tutoring done. And when I was done with that, I signed on to Grubhub and I went out and delivered food for the lunch shift, which I just got finished with a few minutes ago. So yeah, just driving around, like, listening to music. It's nice to be in an air-conditioned car, which I just got, like, last month. A few months ago, the air conditioning blew out on my Honda Accord. And at that point, I realized that it was only a matter of time. I was going to have to get a new car. I took my Honda to the shop and asked them to take a look at the air conditioner, and it was going to cost, like, $1,500 to fix, along with all these other problems. You know, brakes, axle problems, CV joints, all that stuff. And so I asked my mechanic, Ricky. I said, you know, what do you suggest if I can't pay for to get the air conditioner fixed, you know, because summer's coming on and all that stuff. And he said, well, there's this thing that you can get called 280 Air. And I was like, 280 Air, what is that? How much is it? And he just kind of looked at me like I was, like, just half stupid. And then I realized, oh, I get it. Because the major highway here in Birmingham is called Highway 280. So roll down your window and get some of that 280 Air. So he's being kind of funny to me. And then I paid him $500 for the work that he did do. So I just kind of wanted to go and get a car so I wouldn't have to deal with a mechanic for a very long time. You know, unless something just goes horribly wrong. Hopefully I'll just be looking at oil changes for, like, at least the next 2,000 miles or so. So 2,000 miles, what I mean, about 20,000, 40,000 miles. So, yeah. And just driving around today, like, listening to music. It was kind of funny. The last order I got today, I had to go to, like, a P.F. Chang's. Get kind of a big order. It was a very big, I think I've actually reached a point on my Grubhub driver app where I've gotten, like, enough stats to where they're actually giving me larger orders, like catering orders and things. So I went to PF Chang's today and got, a big delivery, and I looked at where it was going, and it was very obvious that it was going to feed, like, an entire office staff. And you'll get these orders quite a bit. You know, you'll go and deliver to, you know, businesses and things like that, and you'll set all the food down in the break room, and they'll be really happy. They'll look at you like a hero, even though you didn't do anything at all except just go and pick up food and drive around and listen to music and bring it to them. So I like being a hero for doing nothing at all. That's kind of fun. So, yeah, I went to P.F. Chang's and got this big order, and I took it to this doctor's office, and I went in, and this woman greeted me who, you know, very prototypical kind of drug rep. You know, the drug rep kind of look. You know, these women who look like they could have been, you know, fashion models like in the 80s or early 90s. You know, or they could be like cult leaders in the modern day. You know, like that documentary that was on HBO, Gwen Shamblin, you know, the Way Down cult, this church in like Nashville, Tennessee that got everybody to like stop eating. And yeah, she very much looked like she could have been a drug rep for like a pharmaceutical company. But yeah, this woman greeted me and she looked very much like, she did not look like a doctor at all. She looked like she was a drug representative. You know, these people who come in and they kind of bribe the doctors in every single way that is just like almost not ethical to get them to like buy their drugs. It's really because of like these drug reps that we had this big opioid crisis in America. You know, these drugs that were like not tested and nobody understood like how habit forming they were, and they've just completely destroyed small town America. They've made small town America look like inner city America. It's just a terrible, terrible thing. And a lot of that is because of drug reps. I'm not saying it was this drug rep. She was very nice. She had a big old Pepsodent smile, okay? I'm not saying it was this woman that I delivered P.F. Chang's to, but nevertheless, she was very obviously a drug rep, and my suspicions were confirmed when I took all the P.F. Chang's in. I set it down in the break room, and this doctor walks in. He's in this white coat, big old gray beard, glasses on. He comes in, he's like, "Oh my God, you got us the P.F. Chang's. Thank you, drug rep." Like, he didn't even call her by the name. He just called her drug rep. So she was like, "Oh yeah, we do everything for you." So it was weird. It was like I was in the middle of this this very shady kind of exchange that, you know, you only hear about on 60 Minutes. So I was the middleman between, I don't know, OxyContin and the doctor, I guess. So maybe it wasn't that sinister. Maybe she was just there to, I don't know, tell them about this new miracle drug that can actually help people live better lives. I don't know. So, yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, you know P.F. Chang's, which just this restaurant makes me laugh every time I think about it. I don't know. It's just kind of like emblematic of these suburban restaurants that just have been getting by on years of cultural appropriation, I guess. You know, it's like I like them. I'm big fans of them because it's like almost like a sign that we still live in a society that's just like totally willing to accept a little bit of cultural insensitivity. Just like it did in the 80s and 90s. You know, I personally don't want that stuff to go away, because if cultural insensitivity, you know, goes away and we do away with, you know, rich white suburbanites kind of being insensitive toward, you know, foreign cultures and things like that, I mean, we're going to completely forget what it looks like, and we're just going to repeat the same mistakes over and over again. So if that makes any sense, maybe it doesn't. Maybe that was culturally insensitive. I don't know. But, yeah, P.F. Chang's is just like you go there and it's like this, it's like the production designer for like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or something, like designed these restaurants back in the late 90s, I think. Because it goes in there and it feels like you're just going into this big old Hindu temple. You know, there's like these big elephants everywhere and these statues and you never see anybody who looks like they would, who looks like they're Chinese eating in a P.F. Chang's. It's just like all white suburbanites and khaki shorts and flip flops. And it's like, I'm not knocking those people at all. I'm sure it's just kind of makes me laugh every time I'm going in there. It's almost like just a satire of itself or something. They've got these things on the menu that are just like, oh my God. It's like they've got this one dessert that always makes me laugh called the Great Wall of Chocolate. You know, like the Great Wall of China, except for China. What if it was chocolate? Oh my God. That wall would have disappeared a long time ago. So. All right, I think I'm going to light this cigar. I think it's time to do that. I had to improvise a way to cut the cigar just now because I didn't have a cutter or like a guillotine or a punch or anything like that. So I had to use like this multi-tool in my bag. So there's a lot of ways that I've figured out how to improvise cigar cutters over the years. I think the one that I kind of like the most is taking like a match, and you can use that very easily as a punch. You just gotta kind of hold the cigar very firmly and then just mash it on in there. The maids, that's the name of the company, the maids, they come over and clean your house. Just came out and told me that they're leaving, so I guess now I got the house to myself. There's really no reason to be over here anymore, but it's nice to just be in a big backyard, even though it's like hot outside, and because I'm in an apartment, I don't really have the luxury of a big backyard to myself. I have to share it with all these other people. Yeah, my friend Dave, who has been on this show before, I've talked to him on the Midnight Citizen show before, I think in this very backyard, actually. So yeah. A couple of years ago, he took his. He does a lot of film and production work. I think he's actually on a shoot today, and he took the. Garage back here and converted it into a studio. So, and one of the reasons that again I've been just doing all these shows on the go lately, I haven't been in the studio like I would prefer, is just because I am just kind of like always just going, and I don't really have a chance to sit down at my house and record anything. But nevertheless, I've been talking to Dave about actually appropriating the studio that he built to do podcast in, because it is soundproof, and he's been recording an audiobook with somebody in that garage in the last few months. So it actually would be kind of cool, I think, to take his area, to take the studio and actually turn it into an area where I can do podcasts in the future. So one of the songs that I was listening to today, I just had it on like a summer songs playlist on Spotify. And the song Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles came on, and it's never been one of my favorite songs. I don't know any other songs that the Bangles did. I can't think of any off the top of my head. That was just a few years before my time. Like, by the time I was hearing Walk Like an Egyptian, I was, I probably heard it for the first time. I was like in maybe kindergarten or first grade or something like that, like in the late 80s when it first came out. But, I'm not really that familiar with it, but I was thinking about it today because my friend Dave was out in Los Angeles a few years ago, and he's got this friend who, you know, has made a pretty good career for himself writing for television. He was one of the major writers on the show Supernatural. And, like, Dave was just hanging out with his friend in Los Angeles who writes for Supernatural a few years ago, and the guy asked him, like, hey, do you want to come over to my friend Susanna's house? And Dave's like, oh, yeah, sure, Dave. Susanna. And so they got over there. And it turned out to be Susanna Hoffs from the Bengals. And to this day, Dave just, like, talks about how that was, like, because Dave is old enough to remember when Walk Like an Egyptian came out. He was remembered a... old enough to remember when Susanna Hoffs was on MTV all the time and how she was kind of like the it girl of the 80s, just like this beautiful, you know, like Adonis on MTV. So, yeah, Dave is about 10 years older than me. And I first met him when we were rooming together many years ago. He had just broken up with his girlfriend, and I wanted desperately to move out of the house of my parents. So we're 10 years apart, but we very much just kind of share the same cultural DNA, because I always kind of very stubbornly rejected a lot of the pop culture that my my generation tried to give me, you know. And so a lot of the stuff that I enjoy is the same stuff Dave enjoys. So, but Dave just always talks about, he ended up going over and hanging out with Susanna Hoffs just like by himself several times, because they just kind of struck up like a friendship, and she will call him from time to time. And Dave just is like, I just feel like every time she talks to me, like I'm just there's like time splintered somewhere, and just because. And I understand that. Like, I don't know what it would be like for me, but it's like somebody that you just idolized and no doubt crushed on so much when you were a teenager living in a small town in Alabama, just, you know, watching this other world unfold before your eyes on television. You know, years later, these people, like, you know, have your number in their phones. It's just, you know, Dave just still can't process it. So he talks about hanging out with Susanna Hoffs, and one time he was just hanging out with her, and like her husband comes in, and Dave doesn't really know much about like who makes movies, and even though he's like in the industry, I guess technically he's doesn't really know about filmmakers, and like I do, like I kind of know. Like, certain movies I love, I know everything about them. I know tangential information about them, you know, who made them, but also who they were influenced by, who the filmmakers were influenced by and all that stuff, so. And Dave was just telling, like, me the other day, it's like, yeah, I was just chatting with Susanna, and we were having a really good conversation, then her husband just comes in and just kind of butts into her conversation. And it's so funny, because her husband is Jay Roach, the... guy who directed all three of those Austin Powers movies. So, kind of like one of the most successful directors of like the late 90s, who's I guess still making movies today, but has never had the same kind of success that he had with those Austin Powers movies, which just became like cultural touchstones. And I guess now people kind of cringe when they watch them. Because it is very much like humor that was just, because it was like, those movies were just based so much on catchphrases and like funny costumes and silly wigs and glasses. It's like today we watch them and it's just like, oh God. But like Austin Powers hasn't really aged well. Like I still enjoy those movies. I think they're funny, but it's not a humor that's really translated to the younger generations, you know, very well. Especially, a lot of the humor is kind of based on the satirization of, like, spy movies in the 60s and 70s, which, kids really do not have a connection to anymore. And also how those spy movies of the 60s and 70s kind of, like, exploited women and all that stuff. And that's something that kids definitely don't think is cool anymore, you know. I don't think it is either. Susanna Hoffs, the Bengals, Walk Like an Egyptian. Yeah, it is weird when you not only like when it's not necessarily like meeting celebrities, it's like when they actually become a part of your life, when they become, at the very least, secondary characters, like I was talking about with Buzz, these people that you don't share like a close personal relationship with, but they're nevertheless in your life as like people that you interact with and actually have conversations with. And I know that there's a whole industry about this, that where people just so desperately want the celebrities to become part of their lives. It's like they go to these conventions and they spend like all this money to meet these people that they've seen on TV, and just for a very, very, very brief moment, merge those two realities, you know, the television reality and the reality of like the television celebrity or the movie or the musician celebrity. And they just want to merge their humdrum daily existence with the life of this like amazing person. And quite honestly, like, things cannot be going well for that celebrity if they're at a convention selling their autograph. Like, I just don't think it's possible that you're never ever going to go to a convention and see like Tom Cruise at a booth selling his autograph. I just don't think that's going to happen. And one thing that made me very sad was that my friends Jason and Alex a few years ago went to this horror movie convention in Atlanta, and they saw Richard Dreyfuss there. Richard Dreyfuss had a booth and he was selling his autograph. And like, listen, I'm glad that he's out there and he's making money, but this is Richard Dreyfuss we're talking about. He was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, like the most important movie ever made, or up there with it. A movie that really tried to render realistically what it would be like if aliens came down to Earth. How would we communicate with them? I mean, Richard Dreyfuss was in Jaws. Oh, man. I mean, Richard Dreyfuss does not belong at a fan convention standing behind a booth charging like $100 to people to take a picture with them and sign his name on a little piece of paper with his picture on it. Something's wrong. But then I found out, you know, Richard Dreyfuss has gotten divorced like many, many times, and probably every dollar that he makes now, he just owes to one of his ex-wives. So, and that's, you know. So, you know, he's out there making money, and you can't fault him for that, but it's just sad. And listen, like, there's something about these conventions that, like, the people go to them, they get what they want, they meet their celebrity friends. They're part of their lives for a brief minute. The celebrities get what they want. They go there and just, you know, make a lot of money in one day for just basically signing their name over and over again and taking pictures of people that they're never going to see again or think about again. They all get what they want, right? But there's just something about that I've just never been able to get on board with. And I've never, like, been part of a prominent celebrity's life, really. I mean, I don't think any celebrity, really. Like, anybody who has ever had any kind of fame in their life, I just don't think I've ever known them outside of just kind of meeting them or brushing into them or something like that. Like, I remember working at Starbucks like 20 years ago, and this guy came in. I thought I recognized him, and it turned out to be Kevin Pollak. And I talked to Kevin Pollak for a few minutes. He was a perfectly nice guy. But it's not like, it's not, I didn't ask him for his autograph. I didn't ask to get a picture taken with him or anything like that, because it's just, I just don't want to resort to that. I don't want to like just be this person who just, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's just something about it that's like with people who go to fan conventions, they get a genuine experience out of it that is very sincere and real. But to me, it just kind of looks all like facade. So, like, it doesn't really have any real value. Like, all you're doing is, you know, proving to the world that you have $200. It's just, there's nothing organic about the exchange of... I was watching a YouTube video of somebody who went to the Office convention. And that was like the most depressing, cynical thing I've ever seen, because I guess it was NBC or whoever owns the rights to the Office. They put on this fan convention in this convention center there. And I've probably been to it in Chicago. I used to go to conventions all the time as part of a job that I had. And, yeah, it was just like all of the secondary cast members from The Office. So it wasn't like Steve Carell was there, because Steve Carell he's doing fine. Rainn Wilson, the guy who plays Dwight Schrute, came there for like a few hours, and he stood in line. And, people stood in line to get his autograph. But other than that, yeah, it was just like a bunch of characters from The Office that are very secondary and are on like a few episodes. Some of them are like the major, like were on all the episodes, but they weren't really like, you know, it wasn't like, if you ever watched The Office, you know, there were like the top tier characters. There was like Steve Carell as Michael Scott, and then there's like Jim and Pam and Dwight and Ryan and all them and Kelly. And then you had like the second tier Office people, and that's who was mainly at this convention. So you had like Kevin, and I think Oscar may have been there. I think you had like some of the people who were like in the warehouse, who worked in the warehouse. So it was just very depressing watching this, because you would see the people lining up, and the lines would be like 2-3 hours long to just get a picture taken with somebody who they saw on TV. And there's just not anything that's very organic about that. You're just basically showing that I have $200. Here it is. So, you know, just working on the zip line many years ago when I was, you know, going up in the trees and taking people on zipline tours. You know, back when I think ziplining has kind of gone out of fashion. Everybody used to be doing it all the time, like 10 years ago, including me. I was getting paid to like take people on zipline tours. Just a way I had of making money. Just saw the opportunity and I took it, and had a good time. I mean, it definitely, that job changed my life in a lot of ways. I had a good time taking people on zip lines and ended up rolling that job into like another job working as the education director for the park where I was. So, yeah, it was a good experience. But people would always come out there during the heyday of zip lining around 2012 to 2013. It was like the heyday of zip lining. And, people would come out and they would sort of brag to us. They would be like, yeah, I went ziplining in Costa Rica. This isn't my first time. And then they would like not allow us to like show them how to put on the harness. They're like, I know how to put on a harness. And they would just be very cocky about it. And talking about like all the places they've been in the world where they've been ziplining. And kind of in my mind, I'm sort of like nodding and being nice. But in my mind, I'm just like, okay, that's great. You had $80. It's like you're not really proving anything organic or sincere other than the fact that there was an experience that cost money to tell people that you did. So. You know, that's sort of the thing, not with the, not to bring it back to this, because I know this is just part of everybody's conversation these days. But it's the thing with the Ocean Gate sub. You know, these are millionaires who were paying to go to the bottom of the Titanic, and really, ultimately, there wasn't. It's not like they were doing research. It's not like they were salvaging anything. Nothing that they were going to do down there at the bottom of the ocean was important. The only thing that was important was just like so that they could come back up and tell everybody that they went to the Titanic. And again, like, you know, secretly, if I had been an Ocean Gate tour guide, a Titanic tour guide other than a zipline tour guide, and somebody came up to me and they said, like, you know, oh, it's okay, I've, you know, explored the bottoms of the ocean before, I've been to all these big shipwrecks and things like that, I would just be secretly going like, okay, that's great, you have $250,000. So it's like, I don't want to like diminish the lives of the people who were lost in that sub, you know, but yes, that was the only really annoying thing about working on the zip line. Other than that, I loved it. It's great. Just still think about that as one of the coolest jobs I ever had, even though it was, you know, as a tour guide for kind of a an event that cost a little bit of money to do. You are very likely to run into, you know, members of the somewhat jet set, people who have, you know, $50 to just throw away on going up and doing what is ultimately kind of a frivolous activity, but is nevertheless fun. I guess it can be fun. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, wow, that was 11 years ago now that I was working out there at the park, ziplining. It's very sad because I remember I used to walk out there at Red Mountain Park and look up at these tree houses with little clotheslines attached to them that we knew as zip lines, but if you didn't know about zip lining, you would just be wondering kind of like why are there all these wires that are going between the tree, or they like trying to buckle the trees, like keep them from falling over or something. Like you probably wouldn't know if you didn't know about ziplining, if you weren't hip to it. And I used to think about, like, what's going to happen, you know, in 100 years or so, where people come out here and just look up in these trees and wonder, like, what was going on up there? You know, my parents, in their front yard, ever since we moved to their house, the house that we're in 1992, there was this just one plank of board that was nailed into a tree about 90 feet up. And we always wondered what it was doing up there. Like, what was this plank of wood doing at the top? Why are there not other planks of wood up there? You know, what was its purpose? Why would somebody climb 90 feet up into a tree and just like nail down a wooden plank? We have no idea why it's there, how long it's been there. You know, whatever. So yeah, like, just what will the future archaeologists and anthropologists think about this stuff? And turns out we didn't have to wait 100 years, because I was going onto the Red Mountain Park website the other day, and yeah, ziplining is just like, I don't know what's happened to it. Like, all the equipment's still out there, everything's still going on out there, but none of the ziplining is open. It hasn't been for a very long time. Like, even before COVID. So yeah, when I first started working out there in 2012, you know, the executive director and everybody was like, this is going to be the new big thing. This is going to make Birmingham a big tourist spot. People are going to be coming from all around to zip line through the trees at the park. And it just turned out that it's kind of one of those activities that, like, once you do it once, you really don't need to do it again. Just people stopped coming out. And so they had to shut it down. But that makes me sad because it was like such a big part of my life. And there was so much hype around it and so much excitement around it. And just none of it ended up coming to fruition. So, my boss out at the park had a kid who used to come to work with her. He was only 3 at the time or so, but we used to, like, just be kind of like, you know, just there's always, like, that kid who's just kind of like a problem child. Like, you love him, but he's just kind of a little terror. That was kind of this kid. He would come up out and just kind of, like, mess things up. Pick up equipment and put it in, like, the wrong places and all that stuff. And I would just look at this kid and be like, man, I can't imagine what he's going to be like as a teenager. And many years later, I was teaching high school, and he ended up being one of my students. So I had to teach him as a student. And then earlier this week, there was this newspaper article that I had read on AL.com about these two kids who were hit by this train out in Helena, Alabama, which is kind of a suburb of Birmingham. Really bad tracks. It's like when I was a freshman in high school back in 1997, I was at Pelham High School, which is right next door to Helena, and a lot of the kids who lived in Helena had to come to Pelham to go to high school. And one of the girls in my biology class was in the car on her way to school, and she and her entire family got hit by a train and killed. And a few years before that, a couple of kids had also been killed. So just a really bad area for train accidents, like fatalities. And, you know, and it turned out that my boss from my school, my former boss, contacted me, and it turned out that one of these kids who was hit by the train was that former student. You know, my former boss's child. And he's in the hospital. He was airlifted to Children's, but he's going to be okay, surprisingly. She sent me a picture of him, and he just looks like he's in a coma. I don't think he is, but. But yeah, they did a follow-up story for the news, and it looks like he's totally going to be okay, making a full recovery, but it's just going to be a very long time before he gets there. So, yeah. So it's kind of crazy. I just think, like, out there in Helena, a lot of passenger trains come through there. So it's not like freight trains that are super, super loud and you hear them from, like, a mile away. Passenger trains are a lot more silent, or a lot more quiet, I guess I should say. And also, there's all these embankments there. So if you were walking along the railroad tracks like this kid was doing along with his friends, you know, they were just having, like, a regular summer day out in the country. It was like him and his friend and these two girls that they knew just walking out there, just kind of enjoying the day. And yeah, it's like if you've seen the movie Stand By Me, which the AL.com article referenced, it's basically like that. It's like there's all these trestles out there, And if you hear a train, if you see a train coming, you have about 10 seconds to get out of the way. And so these kids did not get out of the way, and they were hit by the train. And my former student was actually thrown about 30 feet or so into an embankment. And I kept on thinking about it, like, how did he survive that? Because, you know, anybody that I've ever heard of who's gotten hit by a train on those tracks out in Helena, Alabama, has died instantly. You know, like that girl that I knew in high school and those two kids who were hit in 1994. And the only thing that I can figure is that this kid, this former student of mine, he's just a, you know, he was a skateboarder. He's one of these kids, it's like, seems almost kind of like I feel sometimes, like he should have been born like a decade earlier than he was. One of these kids who's like a skateboarder, you know, he dresses like your you know, best friend skateboarder did back in the 90s. Just baggy jeans, you know, like the Skechers tennis shoes, the long sleeves, no matter how hot it is. You know, he's a real skateboarder guy. I mean, like his favorite movie, I remember because I had him in a film class where I showed him Close Encounters of the Third Kind, so he got to see that before he, you know, anyway. Yeah, his favorite movie was this movie called Mid-90s. It was made a few years ago, but it takes place in the 90s and then the skateboarder scene in like Southern California. So, you know, just one of these kids who just like looks like he should have been, he would have been perfectly at home in like 1994, you know. So, yeah, that's the only thing I can figure though, is because he's super physical kid, very well balanced. That's probably what saved him. So, yeah, this guy that I actually used to work with on the zip line was a ballet dancer, and he rode a motorcycle to and from work every day, and he was hit head on by a car in an intersection on his motorcycle and survived because he's a ballet dancer. He was basically able to just do like a pirouette over the car. He like literally jumped over the car. When he was hit by the car, he just jumped over and landed totally on his feet, you know. So maybe I should take up ballet or skateboarding or something like that rather than just sitting in the backyard smoking cigars. Yeah, I have a motorcycle myself. I don't know if I've talked about this that much, but I bought a motorcycle last year. Just because, like, you know, fuck it, I wanted one. And not getting any younger. I've always wanted a motorcycle. I've always just wanted to, like, get on something that can just kill me instantly. And, yeah, ever since then, I've gone back and forth on whether or not I just want to get rid of it. It was not exactly an impulse purchase, but it was pretty close. My wife, Jessica, was not very happy with me about buying it. We got into several pretty big fights about it. I think she eventually kind of made her peace with it when it was just like, I just decided to use the motorcycle to kind of get back and forth to school. You know, just basically driving it about 5 or 6 blocks to school, you know. And, yeah, I've been thinking about selling it, especially recently, ever since I got the new car, and I've got that payment every month now. And that's just something that hits you, like really, really hits you when you go for so many years without having a car payment, and then you just decide to get a new car, and then suddenly it's like, okay, there's like half of the money that I make every month, you know. But yeah, then a couple of weeks ago, the actor Treat Williams, who you may remember from such films as Prince of the City and The Phantom, Yeah, Treat Williams is something like 70 years old, and he was just hit on his motorcycle and killed instantly. Been riding motorcycles for years, and he was at an intersection making like a turn at something like 5 miles an hour. And this car just came on and didn't even see him. Just killed him instantly. So that kind of made me reconsider, I think for the final time, selling or having a motorcycle. All right, I think I'm going to call it there. This has been a nice time. And it's actually starting to cool off a little bit. I see that the sky is getting kind of gray. And it's just one of those hot summer afternoons, but looks like it's going to storm. And I've got to do some more tutoring. Because the day isn't getting any younger. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me. You can check me out over at themidnightcitizen.com. Also at OnSug, the Overnightscape Underground, onsug.com. And let me know if you are liking anything that you're hearing now. I don't know. Smash that like button. Or comment. You know, it's like the only reason that I keep doing the show is that people tell me that they're listening to it. I think I would keep doing the show every once in a while if people weren't, just for my own sanity, but it helps me if you tell me if you like anything that you hear or disagree with me. I don't know. Maybe P.F. Chang's is like the best restaurant ever and it's super politically correct. I don't know. All right. Keep your eyes open.